Broadcasting live statewide from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a guy who gives edible undies as gifts just because they taste good, Pete Schwabba.
Hey, welcome back to Nightlight. Great to have you with me for hour number two. We are broadcasting statewide from beautiful downtown Green Bay at City Deck Landing from WGBW, our Green Bay studios. Great to have you with me. That was fun talking to Tarl Knight. So we're going to pivot a little bit here, folks. We're going to go from sort of a local promoter and artistic guy, musician, to more of a writer and hit movie writer type guy. Boy, I got away with words. It is my pleasure to welcome to Nightlight writer of Ricky Stenicki and Hall Pass, Pete Jones. Hey, Pete.
Hey, Pete, how are you?
Good, how are you doing?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm what you would call a hit writer, but actually, you know what, though? The Ricky Stenicki's doing pretty well on Amazon right now, so it's kind of fun.
You know, I was going to ask you about that, and you are a hit writer compared to me. I've seen the totals on the films I've written. You're doing just fine, buddy. How do you track that? Like, I remember you used to open the paper and see what a movie did, see what the box office was. How do they track that on Amazon? And more importantly, how does it affect your residuals?
You know what? The residuals, that's an interesting thing. We'll see what happens, because of the strike and what we were striking about. Supposedly, it's going to, the residuals are going to be up. But I had heard that Amazon, because they're Amazon Prime, it's like a percentage of the people that sign up for it. And I don't know, they've got like 2 billion people on Amazon Prime. So I'm not exactly sure how the residuals work. But they said that it's number one worldwide. Again, I don't know what that means. I know that they're happy.
That's so cool, Pete. Now, was this your idea? Was this your pitch? Or did you just come on to do some drafts? How did that work?
Yeah, no, it was crazy. It was a guy that I don't know, Jeff Buchel. It was his idea, and he had written the original script. And then Pete Fairley had brought me in, and Mike Cerrone. The last time I wrote on the script was probably 8 years ago.
Oh, my gosh.
Two friends of mine took it over, I don't know, in 2021 or so. And they did a great job, but the way the WGA works, if they use some stuff from a script that I had worked on, and they had brought some great, they did a great job themselves. But what ended up happening is the WGA said, that I would still get credit on it.
That's so great. Wow. Were you on the set at all, Pete?
No, I wasn't. Okay. I wasn't. Jarvis and Freeman, the other writers, they were. And it's, again, this is kind of the weasel thing about being a writer is like there's a couple moments that people love in the movie. And they're like, oh, you had to have written that part. And I didn't. I honestly can't remember everything, but I know there's a couple moments. And it was all Pete Fairley, Brian Jarvis, and Jim Freeman. I'm lying my butt off. I wrote that. Yeah, you love that John Cena moment? Yeah, sure, that was me. It wasn't.
Thanks. It's nice to be recognized. That's fantastic.
Yeah, exactly.
How do you think Jackie Flynn's performance was, our mutual friend?
Jackie is, I think the Academy is going to discover him eventually.
It'll be him with a little piece of cardboard over his junk walking out on stage, yeah. I think, instead of seeing
it. Oh, that'd be great. Yeah, no, Jackie's in all of the Fairley stuff, and he's fantastic. He makes you laugh on screen and off screen.
He's so great. He was on the show a few weeks ago and promoting it a little bit. Love Jackie.
I'm hoping for their sake. I mean, what's it called? Their show on Netflix took off.
Oh, Loudermilk.
Loudermilk. Yeah. So for Jackie's sake, I hope they get another season.
Me too. And Brian Regan, like one of my all-time favorite comics, is on that show too. It's such a funny show.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. It's so good to see, like, it was like out in the wilderness and then Netflix picked it up, and it got what it deserved. You know, it was not, it was in the top 10 for like 2-3 months.
Yeah. And the first time it came on, I was talking to Jack and he said, yeah, check it out. It's really funny. It's on like AT&T Part 2 Plus or something. I'm like, what? How? Somehow I tracked it down and I watched a couple episodes, but it's a lot easier now when Netflix did the reboot. So, Pete, you also wrote a film, and I remember hearing about this. I still haven't seen it, called The Greatest Beer Run Ever, something I think is such a great title for a film. How's that doing, and what was that experience like for you? Was that your idea, or, again, were you just a hired gun?
I'd love to say it was. It was one of those things that it had to be a true story, or else you would have thought it was too writery.
Yeah.
It's about this guy who was annoyed by how everyone was protesting Vietnam. And he just decided he's going to jump on a ship and bring beer to his buddies. Except for the fact that there's no civilians allowed in a war zone. And
unless they have beer, maybe.
Yeah. And it's a true story. A guy named Chickie Donahue, awesome guy, still alive today. And Zac Efron played him. And it's a true story. It's one of those things, as a writer, you don't want to get in the way of how good the story is.
Right.
You know, it was a lot of fun. It's on Apple. Okay. Russell Crowe's in it and Zac Efron. And it's really, I don't mean to be tough. It's a thoroughly enjoyable movie. Pete Fairley directed it and did a great job.
Do you only write movies that star Zac Efron, Pete? Is that how that works now?
Yes. My daughters are quite happy about this.
That's great. So let's talk about Hall Pass too. Cause I initially reached out to you because I saw it was the anniversary of the day it dropped. And I was like, oh my God, I got to reach out to Pete Jones and see if he'll come on the show. How fun was that? Rich Brown, my buddy, was in that and plays the guy in the locker room with a really tiny prosthetic that made me laugh hysterically. At least he claims
it's
a prosthetic.
It was a prosthetic?
he should say yes, for sure. But what a fun
movie.
And
Rich Brown, he was terrific in it. It was so much fun dealing with him before he got on camera, putting on the prosthetic.
I said that was one of the only times in your life, Rich, someone probably said, well, you're too well endowed, Rich. We gotta fix that. So,
the Fairleys had offered me that part.
Oh,
and,
nice.
Being a fellow redhead like Rich, and I have a wife and little kids at the time, and I just thought they're not paying me enough for that.
All right. So what was that experience like, Pete? Such a great, I've never been able to get that concept. Like I had a writing partner and he did Meet the Parents and he always had these great titles and concepts. And I love the writing process. I could never get a good concept. You came up, Hall Pass is yours, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Where did that one come from?
That I'd love to say the idea came from my wife, but my in-laws weren't too happy about that idea. Neither was my mom, but it was one of those things where I just always had this thing of, oh God, if I wasn't married, you know how much action I get, like this ring is what's stopping me.
Right.
And my wife had said a few times to me about that, the best way to cure a candyholic is by letting them have all the candy they can eat, you know, and then all of a sudden you just get sick of it. You know, that's her theory.
Right.
And so I thought about it in terms of marriage, on top of the fact of, oh wow, you know, the only reason I'm not getting all these beautiful ladies is because I'm married. Well, the truth of the matter is I wasn't getting any beautiful ladies before I got married other than my wife. So I just kind of ran with that idea, and luckily the Fairley brothers and Owen Wilson jumped on board.
Wow, that's fun. I think I met you, you probably don't remember this, we met right after you did Stolen Summer, and you were on Project Greenlight, Illinois. Uh-huh. I was living in Chicago at the time, or maybe I was in LA, but anyway, they had an Illinois film gathering out there at the Universal Hilton. They do it. Wisconsin filmmakers did it too, but
Jeff Garland was there.
Yeah. Oh, pardon?
Jeff Garland was there.
Yes.
When they brought in all the Chicago food and all that stuff.
Yes. Jeff was there and always hilarious. But
yes,
I did a film called The Godfather of Green Bay in 2003 and 2004. And I think we had your whole crew from, no, it wasn't, it was the second film you did.
Outing Riley.
Yes, Outing Riley. Yeah. They all came from your set, which they said was really fun. And then we shot in a bar in northern Wisconsin. So I think they were excited to get away from both of us, but they had a great time on your set for what that's worth.
And they had a great time on your set. I remember we talked about it and that whole crew. I'd love to get something going with, you know, locally with something.
So
get back together with a few of them.
Yeah, for sure. I want to ask you about that because you live in, I think when we first met, you were living in L.A., but you're correct. In Chicago now, and that's your hometown. It's my original hometown, too. I grew up in the Portage Park area before I moved to Wisconsin. And does it help you as a writer living in Chicago, or did you write better in L.A.? Where are you more creatively influenced?
So I grew up in Deerfield, which is about 20 miles north of the city, and I live in Deerfield. I'm that loser who's still in his hometown. As a writer, I mean, you just gotta write. To say where I write better, I like home, but I really enjoyed LA. We lived there for almost 10 years. It's just it was expensive, and you know, I got three kids, and I married my high school sweetheart again. I'm that loser, you know. First girl that said yes, I held on.
Seems and, it worked out okay for you, though.
Yeah, no, it's pretty good. But I never felt like I was at home in Los Angeles, and I feel like this is my home.
That's interesting. I didn't really feel like that either. And like I had a lot of friends of mine that were fellow comics, but I kind of stopped doing stand-up when I got there. And then when my kids got into school and you met other parents, I was like, all right. And then it started to feel like home, and then we left. So, hey Pete, I want to ask you a couple more questions I want to ask you about Project Greenlight when we come back, because I thought that must have been a really interesting experience for you.
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
We've got more with very prolific writer Pete Jones coming up next on Nightlight with Pete Schwabe on the Civic Media Radio Network. Great to be here with you. Great to have you with me on Nightlight tonight on this beautiful Thursday night in downtown Green Bay, broadcasting statewide on the Civic Media Radio Network. My guest right now is Pete Jones. He is a writer, and he's written such films as Hall Pass. You can see that just about anywhere. Ricky Stenicki, which you can currently check out on Prime, just opened about a week and a half ago. And The Greatest Beer Run Ever, the coolest title ever, that is on Apple TV. You can check that out. He did all of these with Peter Farrelly, and that's got to be fun. Working with a guy like Pete, who's just such a great writer himself. Did you learn a lot, Pete, doing that?
Yeah, I've learned a ton. I've been working with Pete and his brother Bobby for almost 20 years now. And Pete is really good at shaping. I mean, by the way, he's fantastic at everything writing wise, but he's really fantastic at seeing a script and seeing what works and what doesn't work. Yeah. And then how get rid of that and then shaping it and changing things around. His brain also works really well when you tell a joke. He's like, no. Reverse. And if you set it up this way and go like this, that's how, and you're like, oh yeah. Okay.
That's so great.
And the one thing that I love about those guys is they have great confidence of if it makes them laugh, they're confident that it's funny.
Yeah.
As opposed to having to test it. Hey, what do you think? When both Pete and Bobby, if they laugh, that's it. It works.
That's interesting. It kind of leads me to my next question. I know most of the writers I know or that I used to hang out with and still do to some degree have either a stand-up background or improv. Did you have either one of those? And if not, how did you find comedy writing? That's pretty impressive that you could break into that without having either of those things in your background.
Yeah, I don't have any of those things in background. I would tell you on the stand-up side of things, and I guess even in the improv, I just don't have the guts. You know, I mean, yeah. it takes, I love stand-up, and I love people that have, you know, the guts to get up there and do it. And my favorite stand-ups are the ones that, you know, like Norm, like he just ate up bombing, you know. Like that to me is, I don't have that. Writing is, it's a little bit safer.
Yeah.
I would say maybe a little cowardly, but you know, you're able to write, and get the joke and do that and leave it up to someone else to perform. But yeah, I mean, I love movies that have, you know, a movie like As Good As It Gets, where it's, you know, got some drama to it, but they undercut it with comedy.
Agreed.
And that's the kind of comedy I like to write.
That's really, really well stated. I think even a great drama typically knows how to use comedy really well. And I totally agree with you. There's nothing I liked more when I did stand up than watching a really good friend of mine chew it on stage. And just, and like, you know, and he knows you're laughing because it's ludicrous. It's ridiculous that you're up there in front of these people and you're bombing, you know?
Did you ever work with Norm?
Norm MacDonald?
Yeah.
Yeah. I did, years and years ago. I can't say I knew him well though.
Okay. Cause I had heard a story that, from comics that like when he did a good set, you know, afterwards he'd be playing cards in the back as the people left. But when he bombed, he would go to the door and shake everyone's hand as they left. That to me is why I think he was so great, to have that mentality.
I never heard that. That is hilarious. And what a way to face what just happened too. Like I'm going to own this and I'm going to look everybody in the eye. That's gutsy.
Yeah. If you don't mind me telling a quick Norm story,
no.
I was working at the Roseanne show, the talk show, not the sitcom.
Yeah.
And Roseanne I was an associate producer. It was this low on the totem pole. And one of my jobs was I was supposed to bring Roseanne the bits, the pages for the day. And I go in and she called me her little altar boy. And so I would walk in, she goes, "Oh, here's my little altar boy." And Norm one day was in there and he's reading the paper. And I walk in and Roseanne goes, "Norm, it's one of yours." And Norm goes, "I'll tell your mother I'm sorry I haven't been paying up on the alimony." And she's like, no, he's Catholic. And then he puts on the thing and he goes, "You're in the wrong business." And that was it. That was how I met Norm MacDonald.
That's really funny. That's so great. I know. I always loved when people like would mistake, like I was raised Catholic too, but when people say, well, I had a guy one time after a show that I did up in Ventura, California. He goes, "Hey, do you mind if I bounce a joke off you? I just want to see what a fellow tribesman thinks." And I'm like, I'm not Jewish, but you can still tell me the joke. And I'm like, I probably should have just went with it, you know, like.
Yeah. Well, I married a Jewish girl. I was thinking about maybe changing my last name to hers when I moved out.
Right. It couldn't hurt,
maybe,
right?
That would help. Yeah.
So Pete, what's your writing process like? What, like, do you get up every day and write for like 3 or 4 hours? You discipline like that? Or do you binge write when the mood catches you? How do you do it?
For the most part, I guess it's not the right way to say for the most part, but just about every single day, it's a discipline. And I hate to be old man river, but, you know, I've got family friends with kids that are starting to, you know, they're 22 to 26 years old and some want to get into writing. And that's the big thing to me is it's a discipline. Like you can get from page 1 to page 30 on woohoo.
Yeah.
But the muck and the mire between page 30 and page 100, that takes discipline of every single day getting in front of, you know, the computer and writing. So yeah, I like to, when I'm doing it alone, I like to, that sounds weird, but I like to, I like to write, you know, from about 7:30 till about 3:30.
Wow.
When I write with the Fairleys, by the way, I grab a lunch and I grab a coffee, so it's not like the whole time.
Still, but, that's impressive.
When I write with the Fairleys, Pete Fairleys, he likes to sleep in. So we usually start writing around 1 and go till 5, dinner, and then sometimes, you know, go from 7 till about 7:30 to about 10:30.
Wow, that's a full day for you. Your brain is fried, I'm sure, when you crawl into bed.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely fried, but that's one of the things that's nice about living in Chicago. So when I go to write with Fairley out in LA, we're there to write.
Yeah.
And so we'll put in 2 weeks straight of, you know, 8, 10, 12 hour days of writing.
And make it worth your while, right? That makes the trip worth it. Hey, Pete, can you stick around just for a couple more minutes?
I
didn't even get to ask you about, I started off on this writing tangent, didn't even ask you about project.
I went off on one too.
Yeah, so, no, it's good though.
Marquette game doesn't start for a while.
did you go to Marquette?
No, I didn't, but a bunch of friends did, yeah.
Oh, nice, okay. All right, well, we'll get you off to that game in just a few minutes if you can hang. More with writer Pete Jones. Check out his movie Ricky Stenicki on Prime right now, and we're going to ask him about Project Greenlight. This time, I promise, when we come back. This is Pete Schwabe and Nightlight. Great to have you with me on the Civic Media Radio Network. You feel joy, you feel pain, cause nothing will be the same. Just another night is all that it takes to understand the difference between lovers and fakes. So baby, I talk to you in the night, in your dream of love so true. I talk to you in the night, in your dream of love so true.
Did you miss what's hot from Wisconsin to Hollywood? Listen to the Nightlight with Pete Schwabe podcast on civicmedia.us. You can always listen through Spotify, Apple Podcast, or the Civic Media app. Take Nightlight with Pete Schwabe anywhere you go. Once again, here is your host, Pete Schwabe.
Welcome back to Nightlight. Got a few more minutes here with writer Pete Jones joining us online here. His movies are Ricky Stenicki, The Greatest Beer Run Ever, Hall Pass, and I also wanted to ask Pete, and since he's right here, I'll do that. You were the first contestant subject on Project Greenlight, the Matt Damon and Ben Affleck show on HBO. What was that like, and how did they find you?
There was a nationwide, it was a contest, it was a screenwriting contest, and I can't remember now, 5,000, 9,000, 10,000 scripts were sent in, and this was, it was crazy. It was back during dial-up time, 2000. And I remember it took like 6 hours to upload the script onto their site. And and that's how I won it. They broke it down from, I don't know, like I said, 9,000, 10,000 scripts down to top 250. And then you had to shoot a little video, and it got down to the 10. And so on and so forth, and I ended up winning the contest.
What was that like? I mean, you must have known how many contestants tried to be that guy. What was that like?
I'll tell you. I mean, the one part, and I'm not trying to sound humble, is to get to that top 250. You sort of had to get lucky, because they did, you know, like three people. When you signed up, you had to also read and rate three scripts. And so, you know, someone could have just been like, yeah, this thing sucks. You know, and so okay. I don't know if that happened. So I was lucky to get to that point. And then from there, you know, it was about, having a good script and being able to, you know, explain how you wanted to go about making your movie. But it was, I don't know anything other than that. You know, when people say, so, you know, how did you get your break? And most people tell you, you know, they wrote a short or they did a independent film and that's how they got their break in. But yeah, I won a contest. I'm it was, I guess, the beginning of reality TV.
Yeah, no kidding. And what a great
shot.
So
Damon and Affleck were incredible. I mean, you know, they were young, but they had just become stars, and they were just, you know, you see how people are on TMZ, or that didn't exist then, Access Hollywood or whatever. But like, those guys are true blue artists.
Yeah.
You know, they really care about the script.
So, I mean, well, that, I don't even know where to start. I was in awe of the whole thing when it was on too. Like, just, I want to say your budget was like $1 million, right? To make this film.
Yeah. Yeah. It was $1 million. And, you know, HBO, was, you know, did the show. And the crazy thing now is, like, our show, I believe, was right after The Sopranos. And it was like season one of The Sopranos. And I'll never forget it. Like, this has nothing to do with the writing world. And I kind of kept my head down and focused on what the job was. But there was one time I was in New York because we made the movie with Miramax, and I had to go meet with them. And as I'm being driven, they stop me at this light, and I look up, and it, you know, I don't know New York well, but it's a famous area there in New York. And I look up, and about 40 stories up, about 15 stories high, is my face.
Oh, man.
I didn't know it was up there either. And that was a moment where I was like, oh, okay, this is getting silly. I'm just, you know.
That is cool.
Yeah, but it was also one of those moments where it's like, okay, you know what, you're a writer. Don't let this, that's having your mug up there, you know, with my blotchy Irish skin. that's not what I got in the game for.
Listen, man, I think that's incredible, A, because a lot of people could have won that. And you've seen this a lot in reality TV too. You win something and then they go away. Like, you made not just a career of it, but an incredibly successful, really phenomenal career. So good for you. And that's great. Are you still in touch with Affleck and Damon?
I mean, in touch is strong. But you know, once, couple times a year, okay. An interesting thing, Pete Fairley and I had sent the script to Matt Damon, The Greatest Bear Run, to play a role, and he wasn't able to because of his schedule, but he saw Zac Efron, and before Zac had signed on, and he said to Zac, he goes, oh, what are you working? He goes, well, I just read this script, Greatest Bear Run, and Damon says to him, do it. Don't think twice about it. Do it. You're going to love those guys. It's a great script. Those guys are still really good to me.
That's pretty cool. And it's nice that they're there, you know, like if you did reach out, cause I got this script, Pete. No, I'm kidding. So what we do on the show, Pete, we talk about all things, show business. We had this great thing. It's Michael Caine's birthday, and we played a clip from an interview with him earlier. And he said, his acting coach said, use the difficulty on stage. Uh-huh. If there's something in your way, if it's a comedy, you trip over it. If it's a drama, you take it and smash it. Have you ever written drama, or you have any desire to try that?
Technically, I think people, they classify my first movie, the Project Greenlight movie, as a drama. But no, I guess Greatest Bear Run's a drama too. It was my idea. It was a book that we adapted. I think in terms of comedy, if the story's got the drama, I don't want to shy away from the drama. I guess right. that what they're saying about Michael Caine is true, is sometimes there's a tendency in my writing, if something's getting dramatic, I want to undercut it with comedy.
With humor,
So it doesn't get too saccharine.
Right.
But sometimes you just got to embrace to be real, to be authentic. And I got to get better at that. But yes, I don't try to, I tend to go for the comedy.
Yeah. I'm that kind of that way too. Like, everything I write ends up, you just make a joke. I mean, it's just like, it's just kind of where your brain goes. Right.
Yeah.
So Pete, what we do on the show too, we ask people what they're watching. Can you recommend anything? Any Oscar films you saw? Great streaming series?
So right now I've been watching, I'm four episodes into Shogun, and I'm loving it on Hulu and FX.
Heard it's great, yeah.
It's really, really good. Let's see. I've been liking this Constellation on Apple, and then I watched a one on Netflix that's in the top 10 that's kind of similar to Constellation. I can't remember the name of it.
Is it Gentleman?
I enjoyed that.
I just started last night. I watched part of the first episode. I'm gonna go back to it tonight. I thought it looked cool.
Yeah. No, that's really good. You know, Oppenheimer, I hate to be, run with the pack, but I loved it. I thought Christopher Nolan, he's not bad.
He's doing okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I loved how he had these short, compact scenes, and it was almost as if, as opposed to having a beginning, middle, and an end to each scene, he just sort of was going with this vibe, this feeling. And normally, when there's a lot of score in a movie, it starts to bug me. But he's able to it just amps things up.
Boy, that's a great point. Because, yeah, that's great. I'm with you, because when you notice the score sometimes, it's bad, you know. But in that movie, it was sort of inevitable. It's like a character almost. And yep. The whole film was dramatic and what Oppenheimer was trying to do. So I think that score worked in that, right?
Yeah. That's how I felt. And like I said, normally I'm not a fan of it, but it had me on the edge of my seat. And when you're a 3-hour movie and you can do that, that's impressive.
It is impressive. Pete, I cannot thank you enough for your time tonight. This is so much fun. Thanks for being on Nightlight.
Great talking to you.
Yeah, you got it. I hope we can do it again sometime, and keep writing, man.
All right, fantastic. You too.
All right. Thanks, Pete.
Take care.
You too. That's Pete Jones. You can see Ricky Stenicki on Prime currently. His film, one of the films he wrote or co-wrote called The Last Beer Run, is on Apple. And Hall Pass, you can see just about everywhere. And Stolen Summer from his appearance on Project Greenlight is out there too, as well as the film we were talking about. It was called Outing Riley, and I know they changed the title of it. If Dad Only Knew. Pardon me. I should have asked him where we could see that. That was from 2004. I think it's about a kid coming out of the closet, and they changed the title to If Dad Only Knew. So great fun catching up with Pete Jones. And Conrad, you're a big fan of Ricky Stenicki. I still have to see
it. Yeah, it was really funny.
Yeah. Have you seen, and you saw Hall Pass, I trust?
Yeah, okay. A lot of times.
What's your favorite scene in Hall Pass?
Oh, it's definitely the one that we played on the show.
Yeah.
When they first go into the bar, just the two of them. And he's like, I got some some pickup lines on the internet.
Oh, that's right. That was great.
And then they totally freeze when they get to the actual.
So funny.
Yeah.
So, Do we have the scene that we picked out that tells people what a hall pass is? I know we cut that. I don't know if we ever used it on the show. Can we play that quick?
Yeah, I believe this is it.
Okay. This is from the movie.
I got a hall pass.
What?
Can you believe it? I got a hall pass.
When does yours begin?
24 minutes ago. Yeah. She's going to go join Maggie up at the Cape. It's just you and me, buddy, for the next 6 days.
You realize how much easier this is going to make it for me, having a hall pass partner?
Yeah, tell me about it. And it's not just me. No, it's going to be Gary, Hoghead, Flats. They're all coming out with us tonight.
Are you joking? Those guys got hall passes?
No. They just want to watch.
Yeah, watch what?
Watch us reeling the babes.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's good.
What are we doing here, man? We got to get out of here. We're burning daylight.
Let's go. Okay. Let me log out.
It's so funny. I love the franticness. We've only got a week to try to score with other women who are not our wives. We've already wasted 24 minutes.
What are we still doing here?
I don't, you know what? I saw that so long ago. Do they even get any? I don't think anything happens, right?
Well, no, Owen Wilson's character does not. He is like, I love my wife. He had an opportunity though.
Right.
But he said, no, I love my wife. I'm going to go back to her.
So great. We got some texts. I got distracted with our very insightful guest tonight, Tarl Knight and Pete Jones on the text line. Steve, Conrad's dad checking in. I want to be known as hardworking, reliable family man. You know what? That is such a great answer, Steve, because it's not, especially when you're younger. Like, Conrad, you're probably reading that going, God, I hope I'm remembered for something more than that, than procreating. But I totally get what your dad says, because really, that's all you have. That's all we have. Unless you like build the World Trade Centers or the John Hancock Building, or you have this legacy of famous movies you've made or sports stats. That's what most of us have, is being a good family man or woman. So good for you, Steve. I'm right there with you. I don't know about the hardworking part. I got red flags all over that, but I like the other part. Christy says, I was in the spelling bee. All right, Christy texted me, and I have the text. It says he's on the Painted Pizno project. It was a typo. The A and the S are very close to each other. Christy, it happens to everybody. You put Pizno project. Right after Tarl was talking about some piano project he has, I asked him about the Pizno project. And Christy got defensive because I said she had a typo. But she said, I was in the spelling bee for 3 years in a row. I typed painted pianos, you dork. Okay. And I'd like to be remembered by my spelling and grammar skills. First of all, Christy just said she was in the spelling bee 3 years in a row. Christy, anybody can join. But she says, I'm not sick, but not that sick. Feel better, Christy. And thank you for the introduction to Tarl. He was great. Bridget from the 818. Oh, this is interesting. Kind of along the same lines as Conrad's dad, Steve. I want to be remembered for being a good mom and helping my children find their way in the world. Also nurturing a happy, loving family with my husband and being a good daughter, covering all the bases there. I think the message there is just be a good person. You want to be, I think when people remember you, you want them to smile and get a warm feeling. Say this is a good person. Those are all great texts. Not too late to get in on it. How do you want to be remembered? Let us know. Text us. Be part of the show. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Oh, honey pie, you are driving me frantic. Sail across the Atlantic to be where you belong. Honey pie, come back to me.
Welcome back to Nightlight. Okay, so Ben Chan was on the show on Monday. He is a Jeopardy rock star. And I believe he has to win. I think it's the first contestant of the final three that win 3 of 7. It's got to be. Because there's 3 and there's 7. It has to be 3 out of 7. They're all tied at 1. And you can see Ben again at 3:30 on Friday on Fox TV. Ben will be on back on Jeopardy. And I forget why. Is there a basketball game or something, Conrad? 6 o'clock?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay. So they move Jeopardy. How does Jeopardy get moved?
Yeah. That's, well, basketball, I guess.
I guess the hoops.
Yeah.
The hoops rule. So, Ben, good luck to Ben. He is, I don't want to say Ben is a Nightlight bestie yet, but he spent a lot of time with us that night. So I'm going to say that's 2 visits, 1 more, and he's a Nightlight bestie. We could also ask him for a donation because he's got a lot of money right now. So
you need new Tupperware?
Yeah, we need new Tupperware. Keep up the good work. Good luck, Ben, on Friday at 3:30. We will be with you. That's tomorrow, actually. Yeah, we'll be with you in spirit. And here we go. Oh, I went way back on the text, and Christy is admitting her mistake. It was Pizno. So, okay. So, and the Badgers won today too, right, Conrad? Big blowout.
Yeah, they won by 30 points, I believe, and just the 3-point shooting was phenomenal. They went, I believe, 10 for 12 in the first half, and it's just something I haven't seen yet from the Badgers this year, and I was so happy watching that game.
So where are they at now? What do you think of their chances?
Well, we got to face Northwestern tomorrow at the same time, 1:30. And I believe we do have a chance against them. Okay. But after that, it's going to be a really, really tough battle. So,
yeah. So Selection Sunday.
Yeah.
All right, that's coming up, right? Did I miss March? No, I didn't miss March Madness. I've been asked to join one pool.
You missed it already. It was the first week.
I thought, oh my God, I've been so busy. I'm not in any March Madness pools right now. So this is the NCAA tournament you're talking about?
No,
it's the Big Ten tournament.
It's the Big Ten tournament. Okay. I was just
kidding. You're messing with me. I didn't think so. I'm looking at the countdown right here, and I get like 4 or 5 emails asking, well, I'd like to think it's because they want my money for the NCAA. I'm like, there's no way I missed that, but maybe I did. I don't know. It like takes up a good portion of my day. Okay, so we have to get to some other stuff here. There was so much I wanted to cover. We had so much fun with our guests. So we talked about Quincy Jones earlier. Hey, you know what we do have is another Michael Caine clip I wanted to play. I talked about his versatility. He was in Death Trap. He was in Sleuth. We heard a little bit of an interview before with Michael Caine talking about the art of acting. And it just went hand in hand with what Todd Michaels shared with us about most people wanting to be remembered as being creative. Like 80% of Americans want to be remembered as being creative people. So Michael Caine, to show his versatility, he plays Alfred in Batman, and I don't want to say he like steals the scenes, some of them from Christian Bale, but let's play the Michael Caine scene from Batman.
Targeting me won't get their money back. I knew the mob wouldn't go down without a fight, but this is different. They've crossed the line.
You crossed the line first, sir. You squeezed them, you hammered them to the point of desperation. And in their desperation, they turned to a man they didn't fully understand.
Criminals aren't complicated, Alfred. We just need to figure out what he's after.
With respect, Master Wayne, perhaps this is a man you don't fully understand either. A long time ago, I was in Burma. My friends and I were working for the local government. They were trying to buy the loyalty of tribal leaders by bribing them with precious stones. But their caravans were being raided in a forest north of Rangoon by a bandit. So we went looking for the stones. But in 6 months, we never met anyone who traded with him. One day, I saw a child playing with a ruby the size of a tangerine. The bandit had been throwing them away.
So why steal them?
Well, because he thought it was good sport. Because some men aren't looking for anything logical, like money. They can't be bought, bullied, reasoned, or negotiated with. Some men just want to watch the world burn.
So great. I mean, it's great writing too, but his delivery is just phenomenal. That's Michael Caine, 90 years old today. William Macy also had a birthday this week, Conrad. Let's find, this is from one of my favorite movies, Fargo. William Macy as Jerry Lundegaard. Let's roll that.
Mr. Lundegaard?
Huh? Yeah.
Could I take just a minute of your time here?
What is it all about?
Huh? Do you mind if I sit down? Carrying quite a load here. You're the owner here, Mr. Lundegaard?
Nah, I executive sales manager.
Well, you can help me. My name's Marge Gunderson.
My father-in-law, he's the owner.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm a police officer from up Brainerd, investigating some malfeasance. And I was just wondering if you'd had any new vehicles stolen off the lot in the past couple of weeks. Specifically a tan color Sierra. Mr. Lundegaard.
Brainerd?
Yeah, yeah. Home of Paul Bunyan, Babe the Blue Ox.
Babe the Blue Ox.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, we got that big statue up there. So, you haven't had any vehicles go missing then?
Nope, no ma'am.
Okie dokie, thanks a bunch. I'll let you get back to your paperwork then.
Yeah, give me a shot. The heck do you mean? Well, where did he go? It's only... No, I don't need a mechanic. I need a... Oh, jeez.
He's so great. William Macy is so great. If you have not seen Fargo, there's probably not many of you who haven't seen it, but if you have not seen Fargo, it's definitely worth checking out. And that's William Macy. And, of course, Frances McDormand, who is hilarious, too. and was Oscar nominated. I can't remember if she won or not, but she was absolutely just great in the film. Hey, this has been a really fun night here at Nightlight. Thanks for being with me tonight. Thank you for all your texts. So much fun to read them. Not sure if we learned anything, but hopefully we were entertained. I'd like to thank my guests, Tarl Knight and Pete Jones, the writer of Ricky Stenicki and Hall Pass. And of course, Tarl Knight is the owner of the Tarleton Theater. Check it out here in downtown Green Bay. Tomorrow night, we've got more fun here on Nightlight. Please come back and let's have some more fun. I'm Pete Schwabe on the Civic Media Radio Network. Good night, Wisconsin.